Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to today's podcast. In today's segment, we have the honor and privilege of interviewing Mr. Jeffrey Tibelli, the CEO and president of RCS Services. We have Mr. Norman Dweck with us, the CIO, and Ms. Esther Deutsch, the operations manager as well. RCS Services is a leading cyber firm based out of New York City in Marietta, Georgia. They primarily service the SMB market. And thanks for your time. Let's go ahead and get started, please.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good. Yeah, let's go ahead and get started with each of your bios, like how you got started in cyber, how you get to where you're at with RCS Professional Services. Jeffrey, why don't you go ahead first, please?
Sure. So I basically came into the business during, I guess, the PC revolution. So as a teenager in the mid-80s, doing PC building for computer retail at the time, which was a booming business, into the 90s. And it was a family business, a couple of them. And, you know, I learned a lot. We grew very quickly. And as I entered into and beyond my college years, it became a big business and it had a big, you know, network. So I learned more about, you know, more enterprise level networking and stuff like that. And working beside the CTO, just learning from a lot of smart people. And then in around 2000, late 99, we had the opportunity to start a consulting practice based on all the experience that I was able to gather and be a part of. And been doing that ever since. So helping small businesses with their technology, deploying it, implementing it, protecting it, hardening it. And as we read in the paper every day, you know, cybersecurity has become front and center, and it's part of our regular conversation. So clearly the solutions that we have to provide our clients are very much around security these days. So that's a little bit about me and our company.
Okay. Norman, can you please go ahead also?
So just my trajectories are actually somewhat pretty close to one another. I went to school for information systems and then went, while in school, go into work in retail computer sales. From there, moved into corporate sales, which was kind of a different game because now you're not just selling a computer, you're selling a network, and you have to think of just a whole bunch of different things involved. And went through from there to actually putting all this stuff together, going on site, building networks, projects, getting everything connected and working, working through problems, like stuff like that. And then moved to actually meeting with all of our clients every so often to point out where they've got risk, plan for the future, and just make sure things were moving in a good trajectory. And from that, it was super helpful just to see all kinds of different businesses and the way different people think, from the small businesses to the bigger ones to the finance guys to the tech guys. And that's where that arriving at now, where security is such a crazy thing going on right now, and this whole move to the cloud, that's where we are at the moment, and that's where I am.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Esther, can you please talk a little bit about your bio and your background?
Sure. So my RCS journey, I guess you could say, started thankfully via an ad on Craigslist, actually, when I was in graduate school. I started here part-time on the procurement side of things, handling the purchasing, and I was fortunate enough to get to know a lot of our clients and obviously work with an amazing team here at RCS, and it's now over 7 years later, which is kind of crazy. But now most of my day-to-day is on the development marketing side of things, just helping us bring this great service to more people.
What show?
Okay. Now, your company, RCS Professional Services, as I alluded to before, it's devoted to the SMB market. And, you know, looking at your website right now, I see you have a whole range of services, you know, going from cloud computing to hardware purchasing, scoping. Would you consider yourselves an MSP or like an MSSP? Or how would you brand yourself? You're like kind of like a one-stop shop for the SMB? Because I know the SMBs are fearful of engaging cyber services because they feel it's too expensive. But tell us more about the company and how you approach your customers, what services seem to be most in demand, and who your target customer is. Anybody can answer this question.
Who wants to go first?
Sounds like you, Jeff.
So, I mean, look, we started out when the internet and email became a thing, and it wasn't an option. It was a must-have for every business, small or large. So that kind of put us in business, and that was where all the demand was, getting people with high-speed internet connections, getting them with email working, and then, of course, collaboration, sharing files and communication tools, et cetera. So, you know, since then, obviously things have evolved quite a bit in terms of sophistication. And as technology goes, it's just constantly changing. So, you know, you're talking about moving from POP email to Exchange email to, you know, cloud, Office 365, Google over those years. Same thing with networks. You know, what started out as just local area network with no capabilities to get to the internet on NetWare, and then, you know, Windows NT Server and you know, Active Directory now, and then again going into cloud adoption and getting rid of this stuff. So you know, everything in and around that. So computers, making them all work efficiently, managing them efficiently, making sure they're secure. And ultimately providing business owners with, you know, confidence that their employees and their company has, you know, a competitive advantage over their competitors through proper implementation and investments in technology. So we are more of a managed service provider. And, you know, there's even beyond that with security now with, you know, MSSPs with managed security providers. And, you know, there's a certain degree of what we can do in the way of that, and it's endless, right? It's like the ocean. So, you know, we have strategic partners as well that kind of go beyond what we're capable of. And I kind of compare it to like an auditing firm and an accounting department, right? You, in some shapes or forms, we're the accounting department, making sure all the books and records are, you know, proper. We're closing the books. We're doing P&Ls, cash flow statements, and balance sheets. And then there's an auditing arm that basically makes sure that everything is okay. And when you're talking security, I think you need a little bit of both. The people who are implementing the stuff should also have third parties doing gap analysis and providing visibility for management and executives into what they actually have and don't have. And we take advantage of that so we could even harden our stance even better than we do. So that's our approach to that, I would say.
Okay, excellent. Now, the trends today, I mean, nobody ever thought that COVID-19 would, you know, you asked me a year and a half ago, about a pandemic, everybody kind of would have laughed at the idea, but now it's the new norm. I don't think anybody thought that we'd ravage our country the way it has. Of course, that's one big trend. A lot of other threat variants have evolved from that, but the biggest threat one right now is ransomware, and especially that with the SolarWinds attack. What are you seeing as current cybersecurity trends today, and what are your customers like most afraid of? What are they asking most about to protect themselves? Again, anybody can answer this question.
Yeah, Norm, you could go for this one.
Yeah, so what we're seeing, in fact, like at these calls now, it's like once a week maybe someone calling saying, listen, I'm all worried about what's going on out there. There's tons of hacks. What should we do about it? And this is some of the stuff that we have, just over the years, been trying to be proactive about. That's why we've been meeting with all of our clients every so often, pointing things out. And yes, as far as like things like risk goes, risk has always been there. It's just what you consider risk and how you want to play that risk. The risk we have now, my God, it's crazy. People are getting hacked all over the place. So, yeah, we'll have those conversations with every one of our clients saying, hey, this is what we think you should do. This is what's going to put you in a better security standpoint. And, yeah, it's not like you got to do everything all at once, but, yeah, tick those boxes and slowly get there because it's crazy what's going on out there.
Okay. What's, like, the biggest threat variant that you're combating right now? Is it just pretty much ransomware, or is it, like, heisted domain names or phishing? What are you combating right now? What are you seeing on your dashboard?
I see two big things. One is ransomware, and the other is where an email gets impersonated and someone ends up sending a wire of money to the wrong place. And it's interesting that they both come, at least somewhat, oftentimes come from just not being good about security, bringing the right tools to bear and not training users. Things like not filtering out email and seeing a phishing attack come in and someone gets duped by a phishing attack. Why? Because either it was really good, and they are often really good, or they haven't been trained on what to look for. And then things like having an email impersonated. There are tools that are made to watch for that sort of thing where someone's email has been impersonated. And, yeah, people should definitely get on those. As far as ransomware goes, yeah, it often enters the organization through someone having clicked on something wrong. And where's the problem there?
Maybe
problem
they're
there
away.
Maybe the problem there is something like the right tools weren't on the machine to stop that sort of thing. There are tools that look for ransomware and will take a machine off the network if they see something going on that machine. So there are things out there to combat these things, and those are the two big ones I see. And we've been seeing them. We've been seeing those for years. The first thing of a client having mistakenly wired something to somebody is probably like, I don't know, 3 years ago now, maybe even four. But it's become more and more rampant. It's crazy.
Okay, now one question. What about the robocalls and smishing attacks? Have your customers raised any concern about that too? Because I get those every day, and I get so fed up with it, I don't even answer the phone anymore unless I know who it is.
That's funny. I don't answer the phone either. I know who it is. In fact, my phone was set for a while to not even show me the call if they weren't a contact in my phone. So, this social engineering stuff, like phishing emails, phishing calls, they have to be really good. I was with my girlfriend just last week, and she was on her computer, and she had logged into, I think, her American Express account or something like that, and I happened to be in the room. She said something out loud, and I was like, "That's not right." And she looked at it, turned out it was a phishing email. She had to go and change all kinds of passwords and stuff. But yeah, we're seeing it everywhere, and it's really the attacks are very sophisticated. They really are. They're very sophisticated. You really got to be on your toes.
I mean, sophisticated and simple, right? Like, my wife once got a call on, your iTunes account has been logged in from another country. Was this you? And then all of a sudden they baited her into, like, walking over to a computer and taking computer control. So it's depending on the level of sophistication of the user and how their eyes and ears are open towards it in this regard. I mean, even some of the smartest people in my eyes sometimes have fell for things, and you really just got to be aware and careful and think security first, I would say.
Oh, heck, I almost fell prey twice. I get so many phishing emails from PayPal. It's horrendous. Anyway, Now the work from home. Now again, you know, the remote workforce, the work from home. You know, we've always have done that. It's been a concept that's been around for who knows how long, for decades. Excuse me. But the 99% workforce, you know, like everybody working from home, that was the concept that was probably envisioned that would happen 4 or 5 years from now. But with COVID, we saw that happen like within 3 months. And with that, a lot of mistakes were made, obviously. Other issues came up, which were unforeseen or thought of before. But what have you felt, what impact have you felt your clients about the work from home? And what do you think about this new hybrid workforce for now? Because now everybody is pretty much vaccinated. Now companies are making their employees come back to the office, and the employees are quitting. They don't want to go back, so they're trying to adopt, like, okay, 3 days from home, 2 days in the office. What are your thoughts on all that, the hybrid workforce and the work-from-home impact from COVID?
I mean, for us, it's definitely a vulnerability point because from a technological perspective, the corporations that are, you know, living through work from home, the security gets a little lax because it's not on company issued devices. They're working on their home computers, depending on how they connect. Is it VPN to corporate networks or is it something else? You know, it opens up an attack footprint basically. So, for us, it's another opening that we need to be very careful of. And, you know, there's also new things that are being learned, both by IT and the users. So it's created some stress, which I think people have gotten over. And, you know, most of the people know how to use Zoom and Teams at this point. But I think it has changed things quite a bit in terms of both from the IT perspective and the security perspective. That's my take on it.
Yeah, it's definitely given us a whole new thing to worry about. Definitely giving us a whole new thing to worry about. I don't know what's going on someone's home computer. And if I don't know what's going on someone's home computer and they're connecting to office resources, yeah, that's something we need to deal with. But it's also an opportunity for us and for businesses. So, and that very thing of, oh, I don't know what's on that computer, great. Then let's sort of take that computer out of scope. If a company has their resources in some sort of SaaS cloud service, then it's really, really hard for something to jump from a poorly secured computer to a SaaS service, because basically you're opening up a browser and logging in. So it is that opportunity for companies to really get to the cloud. And when you get your stuff to the cloud in the right way, you take out a whole bunch of risks, especially if you apply the right security to it. Things like MFA and password managers and stuff like that. You apply the right security to the right cloud services, my God, your security risks go down a ton. And you've got people who are happy working from anywhere, and who knows, I don't know, do you need as much office space? There's got to be some clients that are happy about not having to pay for as big offices. Like, so for example, we got a call from one of our clients, RBX Active, yesterday. They make activewear. We're bringing on a guy in, not in New York, not near their base, and we're wondering how to secure that guy's login. And we went over it, and it's great what they've got going on, because all of their stuff is SaaS services. All their stuff is in the cloud. So you set them up with the accounts and the right security on those accounts, like MFA, and they're okay. They're most likely going to be okay as far as security goes, and having that guy from work from wherever he is, and not having to worry about that guy's computer and that guy being productive. So, yeah, there's a lot of risk and a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of companies leave themselves exposed. With the adoption of cloud, that's how all this cyber business has become a business. It's basically opened up the floodgates to some degree, and for the companies that do it halfway, which means let's move to the cloud, but let's not have single sign-on, let's not have two-factor authentication because it's too much work or effort or planning. That's where a lot of exposure gets created. So it almost becomes an evil unless you do it right.
I left it on.
What kind of just out of curiosity, what kind of cloud platform do you guys use? Use AWS or do you use Azure or do you use both?
We tend to move people in the Azure direction. I love what's going on there. Microsoft has come from, like Microsoft does. They saw something and they knew it was the future. They came from nothing and made a service that is amazing and is constantly improving. In fact, for us, the hardest thing is just keeping up with Microsoft's pace of innovation and realizing all the features that they have and all the features that are coming up. I love what's going on in Azure. As far as AWS concerned, yeah, Amazon has had this right for a long time. They're doing a great job, and that service is also great. I like them both. We tend to use Azure, though, Microsoft Azure.
Okay. So you don't do anything with AWS or anything, though, or is that curiosity?
We have a couple of clients with a little bit of services on there, but no, most of the stuff we have is on Azure, and it's like coming from Microsoft Networks onto Microsoft Networks. What were you going to say, Jeff?
No, I was going to say exactly what you just hit on, which is basically, you know, we've spent the last 20 or 30 years supporting, you know, many networks, and Microsoft is a big part of the footprint for our install base. We do a lot with Apple as well. That being said, you know, Microsoft has developed a lot of this product portfolio around either full cloud adoption or you know, a mixed cloud adoption where you have some on-prem and some on the cloud, and a lot of the product set that they have developed and created kind of allows it to go hand-in-hand very easily. Additionally, we've been a Microsoft partner since inception. And their whole distribution strategy of how we buy it and sell it is just a lot easier for us. And I think AWS killed it largely around environments that just purely live on the cloud, like websites and other cloud type of products. So I think just Azure and Microsoft works better for us. But that being said,
okay, cool.
AWS is great.
I like Azure too, so anyway. I'm going to get this question asked many a time, and I get asked too, what's the one piece of advice that you'd give SMB owners what they can do to help mitigate the risk of cybercrime? Now, obviously, we all are at risk. I mean, we all can be prone to cyber attack, but what can we do to mitigate that risk? What do you tell clients and SMB owners in that regard?
I mean,
as far as the technology goes, if you don't have MFA on, if you don't have MFA on all of your logins to everything, you're just asking to be hacked. I mean, really, you are just asking for it. It's going to happen to you. As far as along the more business lines, consult somebody. Consult an MSP. Make sure that someone who knows computers is looking at your stuff, because you started a business not in computers. You started a business to do whatever you're doing. You're not going to know what needs to happen as far as computers and security goes. So consult somebody.
Yeah, I was going to answer the same exact way.
Taking all his answers.
No, it's important to talk about it and have a strategic planning practice in place for all elements of your business, but without that, nothing's going to happen.
I would just say also, before I worked with RCS, now I'm so much more aware of what to look out for in my inbox, and probably I would have clicked on Barrister Sam many things that I wouldn't click on now. So I've learned, I watched obviously Norman's webinar on what not to click on, what to click when it comes to potential phishing scams, and it helped me know what links to look at, what URLs. So So I've learned a lot from being here.
Cool. Excellent. It's awesome. Do you have any other piece of advice? I mean, do you tell people, like, what do you think about the Zero Trust framework? I mean, are you guys proponents for that or anything like that where it's so locked down, you know, you really can't trust anybody? Do you have clients doing that kind of framework?
Love it. Love it. To a large extent, we do it here. And, yeah, we have clients that are doing that sort of thing. When things move to being outside the office, it sort of almost made Zero Trust easier to do, right? So you're in the office. There's a whole lot of trust that just comes from you walking into the office and logging onto that computer, right? You log onto that computer, and great, the server trusts you, the firewall, everything trusts you. But when you're at home, it's granted, I don't know who you are, I don't know where you're coming from, I don't know what your network is. So that whole Zero Trust thing, the work from home almost pushed people in that direction, which was great.
Okay. Now, one question I want to ask you, what do you think of single sign-on solutions in lieu of the password? Like, one big thing is biometrics, you know, like a little fingerprint scanner or an iris scanner. Have you had any questions from the clients about that? Or?
Okay, I'm jumping in again on this one. Single sign-on, I mentioned this to our clients. I pushed our clients towards it. Single sign-on is deceptively awesome. Why? Because you almost miss out on the real positives of it. People think single sign-on, oh, great, I log into one thing and it logs me into all the other things. But it's so much more than that. When you log into, say, QuickBooks Online, they're just looking at your login, right? You have the username and password and whatever MFA, you're in. Awesome. Great. They're not thinking major security and all that. They're just thinking the guy logged on, he's in. But if you bring a single sign-on, like an identity provider like Azure AD, to bear with their enterprise mobility and security suite, you're now bringing Microsoft security to that logon. So while QuickBooks is just looking to see if you had the right username and password, Microsoft is looking at so much more than that. They're saying, hey, where'd that guy log on from? What computer did he log on from? Did that computer have antivirus on it? Did that guy log on from New York and then 5 minutes later will log on from London? That's impossible. You can't get from New York to London in 5 minutes. Did that guy log on from an anonymous browser? Is he using an anonymous IP? Is he using a Tor browser? All these things that are like major, you know, red flag as far as security goes. The SaaS guys, they build a service that is their service. You know, the QuickBooks makes accounting software. They're not thinking security. So when you bring a single sign-on to bear, you're getting better security on that. So you're getting better security, and then you also get the idea of, I don't need 14 different passwords. I just need to know my one password and have that MFA be really good, easy, and convenient. Like, when I talk to clients and they're like, oh, we've mentioned MFA for years. My God, how many people have I heard say, no, it's too much of a pain to do because I got to open my phone, I have to look at a code, and I have to type in a code. Ugh, too much to do. But great, you bring, like I'm saying again, you bring Microsoft to bear. When I log on to something, I get a notification on my phone. I tap on that notification. I click approve. Could not be easier. So I got multi-factor authentication. I got a biometric scan because my phone is set to not allow me to do it without doing Face ID. And it was an easy login. All I had to do was remember one password. And I brought someone's security to bear on that. So SSO. Great. SSO being a single sign-on. Love it. And yes, deceptively easy and secure for clients.
Excellent. Now, the next question, I'm going to kind of revert to Shakespeare here. To pay or not to pay, that is the question. With the ransomware attacks, do you, are you an advocate of paying the ransom or just saying, no, I'm not going to pay it, and we're going to go back from our backups and restore processes that way? What do you tell clients, and what are your views on that? And anybody can answer this question.
Well, first,
yeah, go ahead.
First, prepare, okay? Again, talk to your MSP. These things should be prepared for. Your backups should be in a position where if you do get hit, you can come back without paying ransom. So, yes, prepare. Preparation is so important on this one. You don't want to get hit with a ransomware attack. And then just first starting to think about your backup. Oh, did our backup have that? No, no, no. Come on. Let's be prepared for this. Before I go on, Jeff, you want to jump in here?
No, I was just going to say that the ransomware attacks that are happening are because of lax security postures, and that could also mean that those entities have lax backup and recovery capabilities. And as you read in the paper every day, you know, Colonial Pipeline, X, Y, and Z, those are companies with pretty big IT budgets. So in terms of, like, should you pay the ransom? Of course, no one wants to pay the ransom. The federal government has a policy of not negotiating with terrorists. Now, branch that out to every single company in the world. They're all going to do things differently. It's not one entity. And unfortunately, the severity of a ransomware attack basically puts you out of business from the time it happens. So you can't operate, and it becomes a business decision, unfortunately, of negotiating with evil actors of, can my business withstand this without paying the ransom, or is that my only choice that I'm left with to keep our entity or concern going? So unfortunately, it happens, and sometimes there's no other choice, and that's why we see it happening, and that's why we see it becoming such a booming business. Of course, you know, no one wants to pay the ransom nor help evil act achieve their goals and grow. But unfortunately, if not prepared, like Norman said, sometimes there's no choice. So I don't know if that directly answers the question, but by all means, do everything you can to not pay the ransom. But sometimes these companies are left with no choice. That's the way I see it.
Right, and doing everything you can to not pay the ransom, it starts, like I'm saying, even before there's an attack. So things like Adato, which takes image-based backups of your server. So if the server's hit, it can be the server and just start running your business again. Things like having other types of backup in place, moving things to the cloud, fast applications, like moving things to online, you know, fast cloud-based stuff. You're basically taking ransomware just off of your problem list. It's great. We've moved all kinds of clients to various SaaS stuff, and then for ones that need to actually run servers, we often take those servers and put them in Microsoft Azure infrastructure, and make connections to those servers in such a way where ransomware can't jump from the local network or the local computer to those Azure servers and protect things that way. So, yeah, there's a lot of prep that can be done, and it's not just backup. It's in how, you know, where your applications are and how you're running them also.
Okay. Have you had clients ask you about cybersecurity insurance policies? Because the trend now is for these insurance companies, it started with a branch carrier AXA, that suppose you've been hit with ransomware and you pay the ransom and you try to file a claim to recoup that money, they're not going to pay you back that claim. That's something that the insurance companies are now starting to do. Have you had clients ask you about that kind of stuff? Or what are your viewpoints on that? Do you help clients select a cyber insurance policy being an MSP?
We're good at what we're good at, and you know, insurance brokers are good at what they're good at, but it's definitely been a front and center part of the conversation. In our strategy meetings, we do have a placeholder in the agenda to go over, you know, what they do or don't have in the way of cyber insurance. It's nice to see that the insurance carriers have basically developed a product that's meaningful. They did have cyber insurance, you know, 5 and 10 years ago, but it was inapplicable to corporate networks. It was more about websites and stuff like that. But now it's actually the policy coverages are catered towards dealing with what the world is dealing with now, which is, you know, ransomwares and business email compromise and wire frauds and ransomware attacks and, you know, them taking on negotiations with the attackers if necessary and dealing with reparations of damages. So, you know, it's a good sight to see that this is another piece of the protection puzzle that we try and make sure our clients are abiding by, in addition to the security measures, in addition to moving to the cloud, in addition to moving, you know, to two-factor and single sign-on. There's a lot of elements up the chain that and boxes that need to be checked. So we don't really consult so much. We liaise with the broker or the carrier to make sure that the clients have the right protections.
Okay, excellent. Now, for the SMB, what does cybersecurity look like through the eyes of an SMB owner? Are they afraid of the cost of incurring cybersecurity services? Are they able to differentiate, like, what's real and what type? For example, AI, artificial intelligence, is a big buzzword being thrown about now in cybersecurity. But to me, unless you really know about it, it's just something that the vendors are playing upon just to make the business owners feel good. Oh, yeah, I've got AI in my new firewall. Just add a sense of security. So what's real and what's hype for these SMB owners?
I mean, personally, okay. I think everything is almost real. I mean, the AI bits and pieces that you're hearing about from, you know, all these solution providers, be it, you know, email protection or firewall or whatever it is, every attack vector that can be entered upon. Our job of selling has gotten easier because of its popularity, unfortunately. I think that business owners feel that they need to deal with it. We even get phone calls from non-clients sometimes, people that we know, and they're just like, I'm worried, what do I need to do? So the awareness factor has gone up because of, you know, the damages that have been done. So I don't think there's a lot of, I don't know what the right word is, but like, left to the conversation that's not real and doesn't need to be talked about or addressed. I think a lot of what's out there is pretty much necessary or at least necessary to talk about and see if it's something that they need to implement.
Yeah, some of this AI is really great, like really great. One of the things that I mentioned, email security. Barracuda has a product called Sentinel, which takes a look at how you write your emails. Do you sign your name with a capital, I'm Norman, capital N every time? Do you write D or whatever? How do you write your emails? And their AI learns how you write your emails. In fact, that's how their AI figures out if your email has been compromised and you're being impersonated. It looks at that and it says, oh, that's not the way that guy normally writes an email. Let's flag that. That's their AI that's figured out how you write your email and realizing what's not right. Microsoft, same thing. They're using a ton of AI in their security products, which is great. Figuring out things like I mentioned all the telemetry they get when you log in. There's AI there being used to figure out if those logins are kosher or not. Are there companies that are throwing around AI and maybe it's not quite all that great? I'm sure that's happening, but among the ones that we've been looking at and we've been selling, those AIs are really, really pretty something impressive.
Now, with this digital transformation, I mean, I'll break it down to something very simple for our audience. You have your smartphone, your Samsung, your iPhone. You lose it or get stolen. You have this huge feeling of paralysis until you get a new one, right? And that's just how we have become as a society right now. We're so dependent on digital and technology. And coupled with that, you know, corporate America is now realizing, you know, hey, the cloud is going to be an important thing, you know, to have a cloud-based premises versus the on-prem. Because the post, for example, there is another pandemic, you know, hopefully not, like there's a bubonic plague. But if our stuff's in the cloud, then we can transition our remote workforce very quickly again versus with the COVID. What are your thoughts on that? And how has this transformation and cloud adoption, how has it impacted the security postures for the SMB?
Yeah, I think it goes back to setting it up right. Like, you can't have set it up. So I think it's the security posture is in a great position if the implementations are done according to best practices. And unfortunately, a lot of these extra security features are extra money. Unfortunately, they are optional, so companies can do without some of them, not because they shouldn't, but they do it anyway. So I think you just have to do it right. That's really the biggest thing. I mean, we had a client that we set up a private equity firm, and it was born like a year and a half ago or something. So we had the luxury of starting it from scratch, let's say. And, you know, it was all everything, company-issued laptops, everything cloud, no servers. And when COVID happened, everyone just didn't skip a beat. They didn't need a disaster recovery plan. Everyone just took their laptops, left, and continued. Like, everything was virtual. Everything was protected. Everything was secured. So I think if done right, but you have to do it right.
Okay. Do you help clients actually plan for their migration to Azure? Suppose you get company XYZ. They're like me, a 5 or 10 person shop. And they say, hey, we want to migrate our whole thing to the cloud. You can do it for us. Now, obviously, you'll do it, but do you help them with the migration strategy and planning also? I mean, it takes a lot of planning, right?
It does take a lot of planning, depending on, you know, what they have on premises, basically. But, you know, how are the users going to interact? Is it going to be, you know, over a VPN connection? Is it going to be a terminal server or something like it? So depending on the complexity and the objects in the IT closet per se, there are a lot of questions that need to be raised and answered. You know, what softwares are at play? Can they work over a thin connection? Can they work over a thick connection? So, and allowing the users to access it, how's that going to happen? So, you know, there is a lot around strategy and architecture. And then, of course, implementation rollout and making sure that the whole process goes, you know, flawlessly or as close to flawlessly as possible to not negatively impact the business.
Okay, excellent. Now, SMBs, of course, every business now these days is on a budget, you know, driven primarily by COVID. What are the budgets for SMBs? What do you find? I mean, are they willing to spend more than and what they want to, or are they so tight they just don't want to spend? What's the what are you seeing with your SMB clients these days?
For us, it's all across the board. During COVID, there were clients who were, we can't spend any money right now. We're just trying to stay alive. We had clients that were, okay, now's the time we need security. Let's make the security happen. Yeah, we've seen it all over the place on this one.
But I think the pocketbooks have opened up and the conversations are a lot easier than they once were. because the reality around this is happening, and there's things happening to their friends who have companies, or they're reading stuff in the paper, and it's just like, you know, if you live in a home and you're starting to hear about people getting broken into and stuff like that, you know, the alarm guy gets busy. I think that's what's happened in our world.
Okay.
If I could just pop in here also. I think also part of our, service offering is to kind of be that resource for the clients and make sure that we're giving them as best as we can do with the pricing. We sell hardware, so just to price things around and make sure that there isn't overhead, or that if a user leaves the company, you know, they're not still paying for things that user was using before. I mean, that's part of what we do for them, is maintain their infrastructure and make sure that they're not overpaying for things that are not used. You'd be surprised how much of that occurs. Not necessarily as a result of COVID, but just in general. And with COVID, there's so many staff changes and things happening that people are coming and going rapidly in companies. So there needs to be some level of organization, and that's something that we were able to do for them, so we can save them money in some ways.
Excellent. That's excellent. Now, when it comes to cloud security, let's take this for example. Suppose company XYZ, they migrate to the cloud. Suppose they use something. Okay, we'll pick on AWS for this one, for this example. And they moved everything over 2 months ago by, they're fine. But all of a sudden, there's a data leakage. And now the fingers are starting to point. They want to blame AWS. AWS wants to blame the SMB owner. Now, the viewpoint I take in this is that, you know, Azure and AWS, they do provide the tools to help you protect your cloud infrastructure, but ultimately it's going to be up to the business owner to make sure all the safeguards are in place. You really can't blame the cloud platform for that. They give you the tools, but it's ultimately up to you. Like, for example, the AWS, there are some issues with the S3 storage buckets with data leakage, and a bunch of cloud clients were blaming them, and AWS said, no, it's not our fault, it's yours. So what are your thoughts on all that, and what are the biggest barriers to cloud security?
I mean, I think it's a great point. Like, just because we put our stuff in Azure, we're good. It's such an untrue statement. I mean, they're basically giving you a blank canvas to create a beautiful painting, but you know, you have to subscribe to best practices. Just because you put your server in Azure, it's still all your eggs are in one basket. And I'm not saying the Azure basket, but you still have one server. Does it need to be redundant? Does it need to be across multiple servers? Does it need to be across multiple data centers? You know, what's your backup? The server can still die, or some servers can still die. They could still get ransomware. So, you know, you need to, you know, ensure that best practices are adhered to on the perimeter, at the firewall. This is the Azure firewall, the corporate firewall, the access, the logins, the redundancy, the high availability, the backup doesn't go away. It's just a much better toolkit. So you still have to architect things in a proper manner, and the must-haves have to happen. Otherwise, it's still just, you know, your company's at risk. So I think that's a great point. As opposed to software as a service, you know, there's a lot less to think about there. Signing off for Office 365 or Dropbox, there are best practices that you need to adhere to. But at least if you're there and you're at least on two-factor authentication, you're mostly in a good place beyond optimizing settings and stuff like that. It's a great point you bring up.
Excellent. Any other input on that? Now, as we wrap up our show, I want to ask this one question. I always ask this of my guests. As we now start Q3, the second half of the year, what do you think the threat landscape is going to be like for the rest of the year and even going into the beginning of 2022? What are your thoughts on that? And everybody can chime in on this one if you like.
In terms of what we'll see, I think it'll be a lot of what we have seen, which is, weak networks and ransomware attacks through, open, terminal sessions or RDP connections, email compromises through phishing attacks and malware on computers and social engineering, phone calls, like I said, from various evil actors posing to be companies and good guys, but they're not. I think it'll continue to be everything that we have seen, and I don't know what the next area is at this point, but I don't think anything has disappeared yet. Until we catch up and our clients catch up and we close all those gaps, which we're doing. Unfortunately, I feel like we're always on the defensive and the bad guys are trying to find the next new thing. I'm not sure what it's going to be next. I don't know, Dorm, do you know?
Yeah, it's only going to accelerate. It's only going to be more and more. Unfortunately, there's money to be made from being an evil doer. There's only going to be more and more of these attacks. And for everyone, for business owners, for us, it's always the idea of keeping thinking about what could go wrong and plugging up those holes. We've got a whole bunch of tools that work on a whole bunch of these things, and we have as in defend against a whole bunch of these things, and there's opportunities of how to have your network set up so that you can just reduce risk by how it's set up. But it's going to accelerate. There are going to be more of these, and this is, don't ignore it. It's coming, and it's coming for everybody. So keep thinking about security, and make sure you're in a good place and staying in a good place. It's not one of those things where you can just say, "Oh, I plugged it up and walk away." No, for us, we constantly have to think about how someone can get in. It's like, oh, okay, if I'm scoping out a solution for somebody, I have to think, okay, how could a hacker get into this? What security do we need to bring to bear so that this thing that we're scoping is secure? Yeah, you're going to see a lot of it, a lot of bad stuff happening.
Okay, what are your thoughts on attacks to critical infrastructure? Do you think it's going to get worse? I think it's going to get worse. I think what could happen is it could be like a simultaneous attack on water supplies, gas, food, the national power grid. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, because upgrading infrastructure is something that happens, unfortunately, not quickly, especially in bigger entities. But I do think that, you know, Microsoft, a lot of the ransomware attacks are happening through weakly architected Microsoft Windows Active Directory networks. And I think Microsoft's new versions of Windows will have safeguards against the attack vectors. So I think a lot of holes are going to get closed up with that. But the corporations are going to have to implement those things, and they take time for the products to come out and for the products to get implemented, and on the bigger networks it takes even longer. So as long as they could accelerate cloud adoption or moving to these better feature sets, I think it's gonna get a lot worse before it gets better.
So if you asked me on critical infrastructure a few years ago, I would have said, oh my God, it's a rough situation. I don't have any, you know, insight into, you know, the water company's network or anything like that. But a few years ago, I'm sure there was a ton of critical infrastructure that was not secured even mildly good. I would not want to bet on those things. But over the last few years, yeah, they have plugged a ton of stuff. We're in a much better security posture as far as the critical services go than we were a few years ago. So, yeah, they're getting to it, and they're plugging up those holes and shoring up their networks. It's been a good trajectory for them. But again, it's a cat and mouse game. We plug something up,
yeah,
the hackers come up with something else.
And
right.
And the fact that the ransoms are getting paid and it's become such a lucrative business is just, and you know, well, there's much more players, evil players, I would say, entering the marketplace. So that could also accelerate it just by sheer numbers.
Well, finally, if there's someone from our audience that'd like to reach out to either any or all three of you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
They could use our info at rcsprofessional.com email address. So that's Romeo Charlie Sam Professional .com info at, and we're happy to chat.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent.
Also, that's the website rcsprofessional.com info at rcsprofessional. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Contact us or 212-532-9111.
Yeah, and we have a very active YouTube channel. We post ongoing webinars about cybersecurity, but also about a host of other topics monthly at the very least. So we always love to engage with people and educate that way as well. So feel free to check that out if you're listening.
Follow us
on
social media.
You can find us on all of the social networks.
Yeah, actually, our social handle is RCS. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say our social handle across all platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, is at RCS Pro Services. So you can find us there.
Okay. Excellent. Well, Jeffrey, Norman, and Esther, thank you. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. This was the first podcast I really had talking about the SMB markets. It's a market that needs to be served, and I'm really glad you guys are doing such a good job with that. We'd love to have you again on another future podcast.
Thanks so much for having us. Really,
thank you.
Thanks for your time. Take care.
Awesome.
Have a safe and happy 4th.
You too.
Too.
Thanks. Take care, everyone.
And to everybody out there.
Bye.